Hello, you're listening to Speaking of Urology, the official podcast for Urology Times. In keeping with our commitment to deliver urologists and allied health professionals expert clinical analysis, practice advice, and policy perspectives, each episode of Speaking of Urology will bring listeners timely and informative insights from leaders in the specialty to keep practitioners up to date while helping them practice more efficiently. I'm your host, Janelle Hart. In this episode, Urology Times Managing Editor Ben Saylor spoke with Dr. Stella K. Kang. She discusses the recent radiology study titled Active Surveillance Strategies for Low-Grade Prostate Cancer, Comparative Benefits and Cost-Effectiveness, for which she served as a study author. Kang is an Associate Professor of Radiology and Population Health and Director of Comparative Effectiveness and Outcomes Research in the Department of Radiology at NYU Grossman School of Medicine, New York.
Could you please discuss the background for this research?
Well, as you know, and as the community knows, prostate cancer screening is still a controversial matter, but the fact is many men are undergoing screening for prostate cancer. And in particular, when a low-risk prostate cancer is detected, there's a question of how exactly this option of active surveillance can be managed. And so there are a number of options now and a number of research publications, including trials, on the forms of active surveillance that men can choose to undergo. And one area that hasn't been addressed so thoroughly is when and how to use prostate MRI in active surveillance. We've seen even recently a lot of data come out on prostate MRI and its clinical utility, specifically its potential to save men unnecessary biopsies that turn out to be with benign findings rather than detection of a clinically significant tumor. And so there is a question of its role in active surveillance. Now, prostate MRI is being used in many places in active surveillance, but there probably could be a little bit more of an explicit consideration of what its clinical utility is and what it does specifically in terms of economic favorability. More reasons, you know, to consider why policymakers and clinical decision makers both may want to consider discussing prostate MRI in guidelines. So we looked at this study from the point of economic analyses and also clinical analysis. So the way that this study works is a little bit different from your typical patient-based study. This was a computer simulation model. And in this type of disease simulation model, it's standard to conduct both the clinical utility analysis, we call it comparative effectiveness, and also the cost effectiveness. Those are two pretty standard analyses that are conducted with such models. And these are models that have been done previously, not only for prostate cancer, but for guiding, for example, the United States Preventive Services Task Force decisions on cancer screening, as well as other policy level considerations of medical interventions. So that's sort of the background in terms of what our interest was.
Great. What were some of the notable findings, and did any of them come as a surprise to you and your co-authors?
I think that from the outset, it may not have been surprising that prostate MRI as a whole offered benefit compared with PSA and conducting repeat biopsies. It may be expected that that sort of a protocol did yield quality of life benefit, especially. Now, what I found exciting was that the extent to which what we call the PI-RADS score, which is the scoring system used on MRI to indicate the likelihood of a clinically significant tumor, the extent to which the PI-RADS 4 score saved biopsies without really affecting the likelihood of detecting clinically significant tumor, and thus the impact on life expectancy, was impressive, right? Compared with PI-RADS 3 score, which probably is a more commonly used threshold for repeat biopsy these days. And that's because the PI-RADS 3 signals sort of an indeterminate likelihood of clinically significant tumor. So it is, you know, completely a justifiable and understandable threshold to apply PI-RADS 3, as is commonly done. But the numbers, at least in terms of both the savings in cost to the healthcare system, but also probably even more importantly, the reduction in unnecessary biopsy in men undergoing active surveillance may deserve at least some discussion The way I might think about it is that if there are real strengths of preferences to be considered, both on the clinician's part, but especially on the patient's part, if they're really looking to avoid unnecessary repeat procedures at this stage in their life, then this is a discussion worth having in terms of how exactly the prostate MRI should be used in that patient's case.
What would you say is the take-home message from the study for the practicing urologist?
I would say one take-home message might be that urologists may want to discuss how the prostate MRI scoring works, right? At least on some level, how the scoring can be considered a threshold for biopsy, for a repeat biopsy. And so while many patients may think of imaging tests, as many other tests, as a binary outcome, it may be important to have a discussion about how the scoring in MRI works, you know, what the patient can expect to see on their report, and, you know, beforehand, it's sort of an a priori discussion about how the patient really sees the need to balance risk of false negatives and false positives.
Do you think that these findings are likely to change your own clinical practice in any way? And why or why not?
I think as a radiologist, it makes me even more mindful about how the test results really have an important role in the patient's clinical course. And so while, you know, our metrics, our parameters for interpretation are meant to be standardized or meant to be approached with uniformity, it is always important to think about how the imaging and the way we read the imaging can improve, right, and be used in a way that makes the most sense for the decision at hand and the consequences of the decision that really rest with the MRI results.
Is there anything else that you feel our readers should know about the research?
No, I just hope that the readers find some utility in understanding how prostate MRI may deserve pretty explicit mention or consideration in decisions about active surveillance protocols.
Be sure to subscribe to Speaking of Urology on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps. You can get the latest in urology news, practice management advice, and health policy updates by visiting www.urologytimes.com. Thank you for listening.